Hello and welcome to the Astor Economic Week in Review. My name is John Eckstein. I'm the Chief Investment Officer of Astor Investment Management. I'm joined today by my colleague, Nick Porter. Nick, hello.
Hey, John, how are you?
I'm great. I'm great. Thanks. We've had a busy week of numbers. I think maybe we'll talk about GDP first, and that'll actually give us sort of a summary of where we are. The GDP number in 2020, GDP down 3.5%, worst since World War II. And of course, you know, in the normal state of affairs, you'd expect that GDP would be up, you know, 1.5-2%. So that leaves us, say, 5.5% below where we'd expect to be. And then overall, We're sort of halfway out of the hole that we got dug just in terms of dollars of GDP, which is somewhat better than what we've done in the employment, where we're, you know, only about halfway. Wait, did I say that right?
We're about three quarters of the, we've regained about three quarters of the pandemic induced plunge, but you're correct that the employment situation is still lagging by quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I couldn't remember what I said. So yeah, so overall, we're about three quarters of the way out of the GDP hole that was dug in the spring. And in the employment, we're only about halfway out. So what did you take away from the details of the GDP report, Nick?
Yeah, a lot of it looked quite strong. Residential investment was, I think, up 33% in the fourth quarter. That's quarter over quarter. And looking into the decomposition on the expenditure side of GDP, that one thing stood out based on our conversation from the last week, which was thinking about the extent to which stimulus might have some leakage abroad, meaning that consumers and businesses are filling their supplies from imports and doing less exporting. So if we look at net exports, it actually took about 1.5% off of growth. Yep. And so I think that's starting to answer the question that we had last week.
Yeah. And so I saw calculations saying that, so for this recovery, so I guess for the last three quarters, it's taken 5% off growth, which is a lot, right? We need that.
We do, yeah. I will say that other sectors still look quite strong, like I said, business investment. But it also sort of starts, I think this report, we can start to think about what the next quarter, next two quarters will look like, and when we'll return to a year-over-year positive number. And so right now, the New York Times actually has a nice graph that we can share with you. Right now, it looks like we're sort of on the pace of, say, a 2007 recovery, which is a little bit more prolonged than recessions in the past. But of course, that's all very much subject to change if we get additional stimulus and the vaccine proves effective in reopening the economy quickly.
Yeah. And so I guess I would add one that government spending was a drag in the fourth quarter. That's a lot of state and local governments, of course. Also, it's worth mentioning that we're doing better than most of our peer rich nations. That's largely because we've spent a lot more money supporting the economy than they have. And finally, you know, it's very odd that, you know, our GDP, this in terms of dollars, is way below where it was, you know, let's say five quarters ago. And it should be, you know, well above that. So we've had this significant shortfall in growth. And at the same time, incomes are up. Incomes are up, spending is down. But that's, the spending is down is the same thing as saying GDP is down, right? But incomes are up with spending down. So again, got a $1.5-2 trillion big pile of excess savings that is going to come in. And I got to say, like, you know, in general, like, I've been pro spending as much money as possible, but, you know, I'm not actually sure that it's the right thing to do right now. I think we should spend a lot of money on killing the vaccine, like, as fast as possible, like unlimited amounts of money. But, and we should definitely support people who are still jobless, but I'm not sure that I would vote yes for the $1,400.
Interesting. It's a relatively controversial view in the neoliberal economics world, where we see that there's still a sizable output gap, and you would think that people need more support. But I think, as you alluded to, consumer balance sheets are quite flush right now. So I think there is sort of this question of where do we draw the line if we're going to see a reopening of the economy. And the next two quarters, are things sort of good enough now to take advantage of that?
Yeah, I definitely think, again, like, I think that people who don't have jobs should be supported, because it's largely not their fault. And, you know, I don't think it'd be bad, but, you know, I wonder, I guess And also I saw news that like now they're talking about the $1.9 trillion Biden package, trying to move that in March. Like that might not be happening, right? Like with the economy being better, the virus sort of on the run, you know, we'll see what they're going to be able to get through.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think March, by the time we reach March, I think it's quite likely that we will have been through the worst of it. And at that point, additional stimulus might be much more questionable than it is now. Just thinking about the world, so we don't have fourth quarter GDP numbers for Europe yet, but we do have them, for example, in China. And China's year-over-year growth, whether you believe it or not, is open question, is pegged at 6.5%. But if Europe continues to lag like we think it will, there might be a somewhat difficult environment worldwide for U.S. exporters and U.S. businesses.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like if we're having a stimulus, like are we just like sending money to Germany again? We will see. The Fed had a meeting yesterday. We're recording this on the 28th, Thursday, the 28th of January. The Fed had a meeting yesterday. I guess my main takeaway was that Powell was extremely dovish. Like, I don't think I've ever heard a Fed chair talk this way before.
Yeah, I mean, my main takeaway was that the first question Powell was asked in the presser was about GameStop. So, but I think
we've got the same opinion about GameStop as Powell does. That's not our business.
Not our business. But we couldn't get through the podcast without mentioning it, obviously. Yeah, he's certainly dovish. I think there's sort of this question of if we have to choose between modestly higher inflation, say on the other side, being a little bit too hawkish and having a prolonged economic recovery, he's come down pretty solidly on the side of higher inflation, which I think is generally appropriate.
Yeah, I would say that he was trying to emphasize. So, you know, on the inflation front, like one, he said in particular, like he's much worried about falling short and ruining people's lives and about the possibility of higher inflation someplace down the road. And that's something Congress is going to want to hear. You know, he also said the question is getting people back to work. If it takes longer empirically to find a job in a new industry, you know, that's people are going to need more support for longer. And he's talking about, you know, you can't just turn somebody who's a waiter into a coder, right? Training and searching and all that stuff. So, and, you know, I think his point is that, you know, if you look at the last couple of decades, look at Japan and Germany, you know, in terms of huge fiscal intervention, or Japan and Europe broadly, you know, huge fiscal intervention, no inflation for decades. And like, why is that going to change right now, right? It's like, I mean, it might, but like we should definitely push it a little bit, I think, is Powell's point. And I would agree with him.
Yeah, I think the international examples, which are sort of all we really have to go on right now, suggest that despite all the fiscal stimulus, this might be a bit of a slog.
We did get our weekly claims numbers this week. Again, some of the short term, these numbers are a little bit confusing because some of the extended programs sort of shut down for one day because then President Trump delayed in signing the bill that reauthorized it. So that is messing some stuff up. So for example, but we'll get to that in a sec. So the non-seasonally adjusted initial claims for the regular state programs dropped about 100,000 from 975 to 875. That's definitely good news, though the four-week moving average, which smooths this stuff out a little bit, is still increasing. The pandemic unemployment insurance had about the same, about 400,000, 425,000 new claims for pandemic unemployment insurance. That's the gig worker, self-employed worker program. So one thing that really exploded, two things really exploded, were the pandemic unemployment insurance, unemployment assistance, and pandemic emergency unemployment compensation. Those are two programs for people who have been kicked out of the regular programs because they've been on them too long. And those went up by 2.4 million this week altogether. So they dropped last week, partly because of this oddity in the little one-week gap in it. So this takeaway there is more like this long-term unemployment, long-term insured unemployment is extremely high, totaling about 10 million, and doesn't seem to be going anywhere.
Yeah, for me, one of the takeaways from these reports recently has been that it's actually a little bit difficult to draw too many conclusions from the headline numbers or even just the components, because things are a little bit muddled. So, I mean, for example, in the PUA program, some states aren't reporting the claims. And yep. The continuing claims, you know, some people have exhausted their benefits, but they're transitioning to other programs. So, you know, I think generally, although the level's high, I think the trend is somewhat encouraging, but it's difficult to draw too many things from these numbers.
Yeah, the levels are high. And I guess what I would say is sort of like the recovery seems to be a little bit on hold. You would want, I mean, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, you know, various states will start, I mean, they'll be safer and people will be going back to work and these numbers will start dropping dramatically. Like you already see the hospitalization and new cases dropping in the US. And, you know, if we start, and it's certainly possible that is due to the vaccinations, because even though they've just started recently, but they started with the most vulnerable people. So you know, we're already taking a bite out of the pandemic, I hope.
And yeah. I mean, I'll throw my
numbers. We need these numbers to start turning around in like 2, 3, 4 weeks for people to have what they've got written, you know, chalked up for 2021.
Right. I'll throw my hat in the ring and forecast that January's payroll and non-farm report will be the last negative number that we'll see in a while.
In our lifetimes?
Not in our lifetimes, but perhaps through 2021.
Last negative number that we'll see for a while. Yeah, like I could sign up for that.
There we go.
And let's just see, what are they forecasting now? The Wall Street consensus is an increase in jobs next month, a small increase, 50,000. So that's well within the margin of error of zero. So I could buy one more negative number.
Right.
Lastly, we did get some purchasing managers indices this week, and that'll sort of open the door to talking about the rest of the world for a sec. Flash PMI from market. Again, this is the PMI is a purchasing managers index that's basically asking firms how they're doing. Those are setting new recovery highs in both manufacturing and services for this series. This is sort of catching up to another PMI series from the Institute of Supply Management. One thing that's notable is the prices, subcomponents tend to be going up, up, up. Did you see anything interesting on PMIs?
Yeah, so I mean, I think services was kind of the blockbuster, right? Going up to 57, and I think it was about 55, 56 the month prior. And so that was much stronger than expectations, which were expected to slide backwards. I think worryingly out of that, though, is that the employment subcomponent of services went back into contraction territory, so below 50. As you said, sort of this idea of a supply, constrained supply chain, the prices paid index was really the biggest contributor.
Yeah, I think short-term inflation is already definitely baked in the cake from all this stuff, let alone the year-over-year comparisons, which are going to start to get very strange soon. In the rest of the world, the market actually surveys all the major economies, and there are a few things worth noting. One would be the PMI in Germany is much weaker. We just said a few minutes ago in the podcast that in Germany, you know, they've had a renewed lockdown and they are not growing as fast as the United States. So this is just consistent with that. And also, if you look at the PMIs in the UK, I think you're starting to see some, you know, there are definitely some supply disruptions, which are associated with the Brexit transition, I think.
Yeah, and in an economic data sense, it's almost a... It's almost a shame that the pandemic is happening, because it would be very interesting to see what the exact impact of Brexit is and sort of this halfway agreement that they've had on the UK and their trade situation. So I think as time goes on, we'll get a better idea of that as well.
Yeah, and you'd think that those people will come to a new way of doing business, and that will straighten itself out. between the UK and the continent. And that's everything that we want to cover. Unless you had something else, Nick?
Nope, that's it for me.
All right. So next week, I'll be back with my partner, Rob, to talk about the employment situation report. We get to test Nick's forecast of a negative number. In the meantime, you can find out more about our read on economic data by looking at the Aster website, asterim.com, or getting more data from Aster Research app. Just search for Aster Investment on your favorite smartphone. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, John.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.
To learn more about Aster Investment Management's research and strategies, please visit us on the web at www.asterim.com or stay up to date by following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and our app is also available on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you. Aster Investment Management, LLC, is a SEC-registered investment advisor. All information contained herein is for informational purposes only. This is not a solicitation to offer investment advice or services in any state where to do so would be unlawful. Analysis and research are provided for informational purposes only, not for trading or investing purposes. All opinions expressed are as of the date of publication and subject to change. They are not intended as investment recommendations.